हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 113. Kamsa continued, being merciless and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. Alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies. And I am so sinful that I believe the omen of providence and killed so many of my sister's children. O great souls, your children have suffered their own misfortune. Therefore, please do not lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme, and they cannot always live together. Srila Prabhupada comments. Kamsa addressed his sister and brother-in-law as Mahabhagao, very fortunate, because although he killed their ordinary children, the goddess Durga took birth from them. Because Devi bore Durga Devi in her womb, Kamsa praised both Devaki and her husband. Asuras are very devoted to the goddess Durga, Kali, and so forth. Kamsa, therefore, truly astonished, appreciated the exalted position of his sister and brother-in-law. Durga is certainly not under the laws of nature, because she herself is the controller of the laws of nature. Ordinary living beings, however, are controlled by these laws. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai kardamani sarvasaha. Bhagavad Gita 3:27. Consequently, none of us are allowed to live together for any long period. By speaking in this way, Kamsa tried to pacify his sister and brother-in-law. Footnote 36. May be noted here that demons like Kamsa and Hiranyakashipu are very well versed in Shankya philosophy, and thus they are able to understand and appreciate the temporary nature of matter and the eternal nature of spirit. Although the demons are able to quote Shastra very eloquently in this regard, they only do so when it's beneficial to their own personal sense gratification. Similarly, if we too only use the Shastra when it's convenient to justify our personal whims, we will fall into the same asura category. Yeah, so this is the point, is that the knowledge is important. That's the actual element that brings about the human form of life. That is the position of being able to progress. But then the question comes as, how will one progress? How you're going to use that knowledge? Right? So we see here the demons, they use it for their own purpose, whenever it's good for themselves, to bring about their own position. Otherwise, then they're not. Means, why didn't he apply this to himself? Right? That these things happen by the modes of nature, people are separated, people die, all these things go on. He wasn't applying it to himself. Right? And he was thinking he's the doer, he's the controller. So only then when it's beneficial, he'll apply it. But the same point is, at least at some point they think like this, so that has the element that you can deal on this platform. Right? Like Vasudev, he tried to use the philosophy and discuss with him and the culture and all these things. And so it slowed things down a bit. Right? So that one is understands these, that means then you have that medium that you can work with. But ultimately, it's what you use it for is then what the benefit you get from it. So just because you've used a certain technique doesn't make it of any value. It's only of value when you actually connect it to Krishna. Right? So even if we're using the Vedic techniques or using modern techniques, whatever we're using, if they're not actually connected to Krishna, then they're not actually going to give any benefit. Yes.
No, Vedic knowledge is supposed to purify. That's why we study.
Yes.
According to what Kamsa is doing, he uses it for his own advantage.
Yes.
And this is the same knowledge.
Yes.
So, mixed devotional service, even though we use proper knowledge,
yes,
it gives
a mixed result because we're using it in a mixed way. See, that's the whole thing. If it's used in the pure way, it gives that pure result. Used in the mixed way, it gives the combination, the mix, the pure and the material. And if we use it in a materialistic way, it gives us that result. So it's just a matter of you have a machine. The machine has its tech, you know, what it can do, its purpose. And so then you can, by your skill, use that machine and get various benefits. But depending upon whether you see that benefit in connection with the Lord or not, that defines then what its actual goal is. Your knowledge and technique, that will define how well of a result you get. Right? Because that's also defined by Krishna. If you want a material result, you have to perform the material activity that requires the material knowledge. So you have done the piety that goes with it. Because good results only come from piety, right? But it's only on the mechanistic platform, right? So if you want something on the emotional platform or the personal platform, the relationship platform, then you have to act in that capacity appropriately. But if you want things on the actual personal platform, on the platform of transcendence, then you have to act within devotion. But the mechanics are the same, right? Mother Jashoda dealing with her child, purely transcendental, right? Then and also in the aspect of sweetness, right? So that has that Kevala aspect. Then you see Devaki, she's also acting with her child on the transcendental platform, but it gives the Vaikuntha flavor, right? Then you have someone who, you know, nicely takes care of their children and does everything very nicely, so then they get that nice reciprocation on the platform of the Swargiya Rasa. Right? Like that. So, but it's the same technique. Then you have someone else who just goes through the mechanics of it and gets that thing for their sense gratification. But the point is the mechanics of interacting with the child is the same, whether you're doing the sensual material, the emotional material, or even you can do it in with detachment on the liberated platform material, or you can deal with it in the Vaikuntha or in Vrindavan. So that's the whole point that we need to adjust to, is that the mechanics are being the same. That's but what your intent is, that's actually then what's being defined. Right? And then having defined that, then the natural thing comes up is for the, how you say, non-trained mind. Oh, I can do anything, so I don't have to follow all the Vedic. But the point is since Mother Jashoda and all those on the transcendental platform and those who are getting anything higher out of the endeavor always use the Vedic because it gives the better results. And since the results are for Krishna, if we claim to be a devotee, then therefore we would use that as the medium. You know, it's not about the medium, but it's the best medium to use. Just like you'll say you want to cut some vegetables. Would you use a sharp knife or a dull knife? Yes, but if in your house there are always dull knives, no, but we can't work with sharp knives because in our house we already had dull knives, so, you know, it's just we can't relate to it. It's not our identity. You know, we're dull knife people. You know, so you can go ahead and hack at your vegetables. You know, but someone who knows, then they use the sharp knife, it works really, really good. But you have to be careful, you don't cut yourself. But actually, the interesting thing is, there's more of a chance of cutting yourself with a dull knife than a sharp knife. Because the sharp knife, you're careful and you move slowly, while the dull knife, you have to press so hard. And so if you do miss, then
Can we say that Vedic knowledge purifies on its own as well?
It purifies because it's Krishna's knowledge. That's why it purifies. See, the material energy isn't going to purify. It's just going to exist. And it doesn't actually interact or do anything. So therefore, it's just neutral. But the living entity, so the material energy is a medium then for the living entity to try to either enjoy his senses or please Krishna's senses. And so then you have rules on how the mechanics of the material energy work, which are the reflection of the spiritual energy. It just doesn't give a superior result like they do in the spiritual world. But the mechanics is the same. So therefore then following those mechanics, that's not what makes devotional service better. Sometimes we think, no, if we know how to manage better, we know how to do things, we have better skills, then devotional service will go so nicely. It has nothing to do with devotional service. Devotional service is the attitude in which one does it. Because if you think, I know the skill, therefore, because of that, I'm a better devotee, that's devotional service in the mode of ignorance. So how is that on any day going to improve devotional service within, you know, the greater society? It can't. And if you do it because of the benefits you'll get from it, that's passion. You do it because that's how you're supposed to do it, that's goodness. You do it because you're supposed to do it and you want to please Krishna, that's pure goodness. Yeah. Of course, then the question comes up, what about if, you know, ignorance and to please Krishna, you know, yeah. It's a mix, of course. But the point is, you have something good mixed with something bad, so then how is that going to be great? You know, it purifies, but it's going to be slower. So the lower the modes you use, the slower will be the progression. Like that. Basically, at this moment, he's kind of working with Sargiya, because he has that sentiment and that emotion and all that kind of thing. But the point is, when that's favorable, in other words, Partiva, Sargiya Ras always gives more intensity than Partiva, if you understand it. So, being educated in these things, they do catch it. So when it's advantage, then it's there. But then when it's not an advantage, then he'll drop down to the...
Is it correct to say that Partiva Rasa is an extremely illusion of happiness?
Means you have to speak more loudly.
Partiva Rasa is an extreme illusion of happiness.
Extreme illusion of happiness.
Yeah, which is temporary, because it's, you get reactions for it.
Yes.
And yes. Partiva Rasa is also an illusion of happiness, which doesn't address the soul. But it is enough to bind you in the material world because you're bound by such a rule and everything is so wonderful.
Yes, it's there, but it's also temporary.
Yes.
But it's not. It means the sense, the mechanical point of Partiva is when the sense touches the sense object, there is rasa. As soon as it stops touching, it's gone. Mm-hmm. While in Swargiya, because it's emotional, so it's happening on the mental platform. Therefore, even if it's not being engaged, remembering it, and that gives that taste. So it can give a longer thing. But then once you change bodies, you don't remember all those relationships and all that. Your inclination towards these two, that will continue. But the particular one is gone, right? And that's when you leave your body, they're all gone. But as everybody else starts leaving theirs, or moving away, or changing their moods, then they start breaking up. That's the point, is it always changes.
Because of the modern scientists, they realize that Sargiya Rasa is actually very powerful, because sometimes people who are very sick, and they're dying, and they're in pain, and they remember the loved ones, they don't feel pain as much as other people for whom.
Yeah.
So, but still, we can see that...
But their whole purpose is still a mechanistic thing.
Yes. So, is it correct to say that simply because of ignorance of the actual Vaikuntha Rasa, which is much more beyond everyone's imagination,
yes,
these two are not being...
Yes, means the living entity holds on to these two because of not knowing Vaikuntha. But the problem is, the switch from the material to the spiritual is that the spiritual means that it's about Krishna's pleasure. And when you're dealing with Partiva and Swargiya, it's about your own pleasure. Now, whether it's just your pleasure or you include others in that pleasure. You know, in other words, you find pleasure in making other people happy. Right? Because you're the friend of everybody. You're the nice guy. You're the great mom. Or you're the, you know, great leader. Or, you know, stuff like that. You understand? So that aspect comes in. So it does have that aspect to it, but still the underlying of everything in the material world is selfishness. Whatever the position, whether you're trying to get yourself liberated in, you know, in Vermont, or elevation of the heavenly planets, get nice things here, just get whatever you can when you can get it, you know, whether others are included or not, it's still the bottom line is yourself. While in the transcendental platform, it's about pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? So that is going to be the major reason that people don't take it up, even they hear about it. Because then they have to make that leap of faith that I will be happy without trying to please myself. Because since time immemorial, we've never done that. We've always worked at trying to please ourselves. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Not knowing
who we are, yes, of course. So that's the whole thing, is that we're trying to do all those things, but it's not working. So that's the underlying principle, is we've taken lust as the driving force instead of actual love. Right? So now if that lust is directed at another living entity in a way that the other living entity appreciates that, then we call that love. But that's why it's said, is it uses the form. As we were saying, is the spiritual world, the mechanical forms of it, the jnana and kriya shaktis, then those mechanics, those are there in their superior quality in the spiritual realm. But in the material realm, you have the reflection of those, or the shadow of those. Just like in the shadow, you have a head, you have an arm, you have this and that. It just tends to be either a little bit too short, a little too long. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's never just perfect. Now and again, it just, the sun's there, there is that moment, it's just perfect, but how long does that stay? Because then that keeps moving and starts getting too tall again, or starts getting too short, you know, so you can look down at your, you know, 1 foot high self there in your shadow, you know, when the sun gets more above, or, you know, the 50 foot long self, you know, as the sun is more, you understand? So that's the thing, is that it, mechanically it's basically the same, but it doesn't have that perfection that it does in the spiritual world. But still, the form of how you deal in the conjugal ras, the parental ras, friendship ras, servitor ras, or neutrality is the same basic principles. Right? Is that in a sense? The quality of the secondary, that's what's different. You understand? Means the quality of the manifestation of it. Right? Now, of course, the quality of the principle does have a difference, because in the principle is in the spiritual world is to please Krishna, and here is to please ourselves. But how the laws governing all these things are the same, because it's the same person controlling them both, Mahamaya and Yogamaya. So the spiritual world, that manifestation is the perfect, complete manifestation. Here it's imperfect. Right? Does that make sense? So the living entity themselves are not complete. Right? Means the internal potency is complete. The Lord is complete. But the living entity has to connect themselves with the internal potency to be complete. Right? Iron and fire. But when we connect ourselves with the material world, which is incomplete, we see a nice compatibility.
Yes.
Right? Because it's not complete, we're not complete, and everybody's happy. Until we start noticing that completeness would be nice. Yes, because the thing is because the solution is not what we want. It's just like, as we've discussed, how hard is accepting Varnashram? Right? Basically, according to the tradition, it's as easy as falling off a log. Right? Is that easy? But logs are round, you can fall off so easily. Right? You know, you're on a log, you're trying to run, the log is rolling, you're on top, trying to run on top of it. How easy it is to fall off. You understand? There's a, you know what a log is?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think
a log is like a tree, right? The tree is round. You have a part of the tree. It's rolling down the hill.
Yeah.
You're on the log on top, running on top of it. Okay? How easy is it to fall off?
1 second.
Yeah, real easy. You can't get much easier than that. Right? So, that's how easy it is to understand Varnashram. But why don't we? Because the implications of understanding means I'm not the controller and enjoyer, and I can't speculate and do whatever I want to please myself. That's what stands in the way. You know? Yeah. And then and only if we think the position I'm in has a prestige of controlling and joy, then I'll accept that or those parts. But then the problem is I still maintain the mundane consciousness. So then to actually accept that the whole purpose of Varnashram is to please Krishna. So therefore, accepting I'm not the controller and enjoyer and where I fit into it, and it's to please Krishna, is the double problem. So even though both of these things are so natural, then it's so difficult because of that simply who's in control and who's not. I want to be, whatever I want to be. I don't want to be dictated by social customs and this and that. Though I 100% expect everybody else to act socially how I think they should. But I myself, I'm not bound by that. You understand? So we're dealing with really low levels of self-centeredness here. Anamoy, Partiva Rasa. We're dealing with some pretty low stuff. But because of propaganda, it's presented so nicely and people think it sounds really good. It sounds fabulous.
Isn't it nice when people are alone and
their minds are not very peaceful? Yes. But the whole point is therefore these lower rasas, they seem important, but they're actually not. What's important is Vaikuntha rasa, or serving Krishna, because within that, there's emotions in serving Krishna. That's the meaning of rasa. And you're going to be using some technical knowledge and skills to perform activities to express that devotion. So it already covers whatever is there to be covered within Partiva and Swargiya Rasa is already included. But we tend to take it that, okay, we have these and then there's this alternative of Krishna consciousness. Rather than, you know what I'm saying? That's like, let's say we have three choices. Okay? You can have the French fries. Or you can have the ketchup. Right? Or you can have the French fries and the ketchup. Right? So the French fries and the ketchup, that's devotional service. It already includes the other two. But we think it's not included. We think, oh no, but these emotions I'm feeling with my family and all that, if I take up devotional service because that's based on duty, that will be dry and everything and I won't be able to taste any of this and I need to taste this, this is me, all that kind of stuff. Right? So they don't understand is that why is there a concept of families? Who gave that concept? Right? Yeah, Krishna gave it. Right? So that's the whole point is that it's given by him, the mechanics of how you should deal, how the whole thing works. That's all given by Krishna. Therefore, that's already included. And then the activities of the senses, that there's five senses, they do certain things in certain situations. Do they have that in the spiritual world? Yes, so therefore it already comes in. So the Shastra defines what is the sense object, how the sense works, what's the environment in which these things work. Does that make sense? So when the sense is in that proper environment, used in the proper way that's recommended, then it becomes purified, it actually works. So only purified senses actually work good. People want to taste nice food, but only if you're engaging your sense in the purified way can you taste nice food. You know what I'm saying? So that's the principle. Otherwise, you can't maintain it. Someone may, from in their previous life, done all these things very, very nicely. So in this life, then they're a connoisseur of some kind of, you know, some kind of kana, right? Kana is food, and asur means the demon, right? So a demon that likes a particular kind of food, right? So isn't that the direct meaning of kana asur? Yeah, so therefore... Okay, so this is the difference, whether it's you're taking prasad or... Very good, okay, yeah. Like that. He's happy with this and saved the position. Where are you going with this? Yeah, okay. Very good. So, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, the thing is they have this, but it's not because of something they've done this life. That's been last life. But you can't guarantee by the things that they eat. You know, I mean, who eats the stuff that these guys eat? You know what I'm saying? So then that's where they'll go next life. And then they'll have the taste for that, but it doesn't need the refinement. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, in nature, the snails, you eat them straight. You don't do anything with them. Does that make sense? Yeah, like that. And if you're really into truffles, then wild boars. They eat truffles. That's their food. Right? You know, in other words, truffles, right? A few thousand euros, you know, for, you know, some few hundreds of grams like that. But that's pig food. That's what they eat. You know what I'm saying? So you'll get those things and you'll have those refined things. Right? You know, who knows how many kilos of that stuff a pig eats, you know? While other people, they take one piece and grate a little bit onto something and then talk about it. And, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that they have the when the senses are purified, that's when they actually work better. That's why you see it in the Vaishnava culture that the level of music and art, you know, and dance and cooking and dress and all these things are at a level of refinement you don't see anywhere in the world. Right? Other places in the world, you get a refinement in a certain flavor. You know, like some of the things, especially what they would be doing in the Renaissance and things like that. Some of the fineness is there, real, real fine work. You know, so the technicalness of it can be as good. But the problem is the taste of it, the design of it, the aesthetics of it has a particular flavor. You know what I'm saying? So it's aesthetic, but it has a flavor of certain modes. It doesn't necessarily have just goodness there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is as you follow the rules properly, the senses become purified. So the best way to purify the senses is engage in the recommended activities of devotional service. So that will bring about the most refined senses. So that means the experience you'll get from engaging the senses will be the best. So no one will enjoy eating as much as devotees honoring prasad. Right? And in relationships with the purified mind and senses, no one will appreciate the interactions between individuals as much as devotees. So it's already included, but we hold on to the idea, no, I have to do this separately to get the taste, when no. Because that's the thing. We want to have it and eat it. You can't have both. You understand? So that's the thing. We want to be in control of it and enjoy it. But the one in control is not the one enjoying. That's the point. But we have this illusion that, no, I will control and enjoy. It's impossible. You either control or you enjoy. The two go together. Right? You can call the controlling your enjoyment, but you're not enjoying as much as the one who's being controlled.
Do you see that this paradox happens because our nature is feminine and the masculine?
You could say, because of the feminine nature, which is the nature of enjoyment, And then, so therefore, then you want to, then with the Purusha, you want to control also. So the two go, yeah, you could say that. But the point is that the actual nature is that the controlling is done to please Krishna, not to please ourselves. Right? So the gopis are controlling the situation, making arrangements in the situation, you know, like that, to please Krishna. So Krishna is the enjoyer here. Or Krishna, he controls the situation to please the devotees. But when we try to do that to please ourselves, then it doesn't give a very good result. You know what I'm saying? It's you could say it's better than absolutely nothing, for, as far as the jiva is concerned, but it's very little, it's very meager, and not very, you know, it's very meager in the quality and in volume. And most of the time we end up with things that aren't so great. And a lot of it. A great volume of not so greatness. Right? So that's the thing. Well, in the spiritual world, then it's different. It can't be expressed. Right? In the material world, people can nicely kind of express what the feeling is that they get. You know what I'm saying? But in the spiritual world, you can't. That's what they say. When it comes up to the taste of bhakti, they never say you can describe it. They always say at this point you can't describe it. Words cannot describe it. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like you say something's wonderful. But how do you describe something that's wonderful to the millionth power? You know, you can't describe it. So that's the thing. Is here you get a little bit. But there you get so much. You know, it's like the, like you have something that's been thrown in the garbage and there was something on it that's edible. So there's basically nothing on it, but you can lick it and kind of get a little bit of a flavor. You know, so you see the dogs and, you know, doing that. You know, the goats even get more because the dog will lick the leaf plate and only get a flavor. The goat will eat the leaf plate. So they get more. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay. So, yes.
So, Maharaj, the difference between a demoniac mentality or divine is just the intent.
Is the intent, that's all. Yes. That's why the intent is so important. And the difference between divine and devotional.
Yes.
Is also intent. In other words, divine means there's some devotional aspect because karma only and jnana only work when there's some devotion. So that's why you see as those who actually follow the Vedic culture, then they have appreciation for these higher things and doing things with a devotional attitude. And that you can talk devotion, they appreciate that. Right? But you have to see what's the ultimate intent. The one is to enjoy materially, the other is to get liberation. Or even within the world religion context, you can talk about devotion and all religious principles appreciate that. But what's their intent with that devotion? Do they just want to go to the heavenly planets to enjoy? What's, you know, what's their purpose for it? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing comes down to intent. That's why we say the Prajumna aspect, or what's the mood, the spirit of it. That's the point where you start, because if that's right, you can get all the other three to be correct. So if the attitude is has that faith or that devotion, then you'll look at the knowledge with devotion, you'll apply the activity with devotion, the result you'll see in context of devotion. But if the intent is for yourself, the knowledge is for yourself, the action is for yourself, the result is naturally then for yourself. So that's the crux of things, is your attraction. That's why they always talk about becoming attracted to Krishna, because then you give up the attraction to yourself. Does that make sense? So that's the point. And if we're it, because that doesn't come for us, because we're conditioned, therefore just it's through knowledge. In other words, the intelligence can control the mind. Means at the present time, generally the mind controls the intelligence. But through intelligence, buddhi yoga, we can control the mind, and therefore then get the mind to agree that yes, this other method is actually going to be superior, because we're convinced by all the philosophy that it's actually a better system. But then to get to agree with that with our heart, that's the more difficult thing. But it's not a matter of sentiment, it's a matter of the realization. Because sentiment means that you appreciate, but realization means you apply it. So even if you start with some sentiment, if it's for a good thing, then that's good. But the problem with sentiment is even if it's applied at a bad thing, it can still have that sentiment. You know, I'm saying Krishna looks so beautiful and the puppies look so cute. You know, so that's the thing, is that you can get the same sentiment can be so easily distracted. So that's the thing. So realization means then you can practically apply it. So that's more important. One may start with sentiment, but it has to come to the point of actual realization. Then you can be steady. Then the devotional service, that steady service, that attracts Krishna's attention. Because if you just do something and then stop and then do something and stop, it's not as attractive as someone's always doing. You know, you start to consider. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. Good. 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 Kamsa continued. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated, but the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. Nahanyate hanyamane shariyade. Bhagavad Gita 2:20. So this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, that was, you know, people knew these principles. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. You should not lament after considering what is Atma and non-Atma. With this intention, he speaks. Just as clay pots are created and destroyed, so the bodies of the jiva are created and destroyed. As the earth itself is not affected by these changes, so the jiva is not affected, though the material bodies undergo change. Right? So he's giving very valid points. His purpose in doing that may be material, but the point is it's still valuable points. That's why it's mentioned here. So you much of the time see is points that are made, the discussions of these demons, unless they have some value to the development of the story in understanding and appreciate Krishna consciousness, it's not given. So this is valuable instruction. We can take this, right? This is the meaning of taking gold from a dirty place. Okay. Srila Prabhupada adds, although Kamsa is described as a demon, he had good knowledge of the affairs of Atma Tattva, the truth of the self. 5,000 years ago, there were kings like Kamsa, who is described as an asura, but he was better than modern politicians and diplomats who have no knowledge about Atma Tattva. Right? Because you see, as Vasudeva discussed on this platform also, and it had effect in the same way, then he's using the same platform, and it has its effect also. As stated in the Vedas, asango yayam purusha, the spirit soul has no connection with the changes of the material body. The body undergoes six changes: birth, growth, sustenance, byproducts, dwindling, and then annihilation. But the soul undergoes no such changes. I think did we mention it? That these six, that the non-moving living entities, they experience these six. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, not really. But they understand these six.
Understand the experience.
Experience. It means they have some intelligence. Like a tree grows around something. That means it's intelligent. You know, it may take a long time to apply their intelligence, but it's intelligent. You know, so that's all the more they get. So that's just a side point. Right? And then your moving living entities, they experience eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But the non-moving only experience these. Even after the annihilation of a particular bodily form, the original source of the bodily elements does not change. So things come from the earth, the body's, you know, let's say, made of earth, so I think it's predominantly made of water. So afterwards, the body, annihilation of the body, they all go back to the original elements. And there's not a problem there. Right? So the water doesn't change because you have a body or you lose that body. The earth doesn't change. The air, the fire, the ether doesn't change. It's always the same. So in the same way, the jiva always stays the same despite the body. Their identification with the body, that causes all the disturbances. Because they're not the body, so that illusion creates disturbance. But if we understand this, then we can function with the body, but not be attached to it. That's what we're not used to. We were used to, I work because I'm attached. That's karma. And jnana is, I'm not attached, I don't work. So that's why when these things come up about doing your service without attachment, oh, but you know, it'll be dry, it'll be boring, and how can anyone work like that? And you understand? Because we're so conditioned by karma and jnana. While to work without attachment to please Krishna, we've never done that, right? Because we've always pleased ourselves. So this is a new one, pleasing Krishna. And then working without attachment? No, we either work and have attachment or don't work and don't have attachment. So in other words, you can see all the elements of karma, jnana, and bhakti, they're all together in one package. So karma, you get the benefit by doing the work, not by the attachment. The attachment where the problem comes up. As soon as you're attached, misery is born at that moment. So you're not attached. Where's the misery in doing the work? Right? Does that make sense? That's the interesting thing. And in jnana, then we're detached, but we don't work. Right? So therefore, how do we get results? Does that make sense? So that detachment then is the weakness there. Because we're detached then from work. And so then in devotional service, it's about persons, personalities, working, results, experiences, and we're against that. You understand? So you see, in karma, the weakness is the attachment. And the other one is the detachment. Right? But on the other side, when in devotional service, then those are used to advantage. With detachment, I'm working. So only in devotional service does the strong points come out. And the weak points are lost. But on the material platform, then, it's the other way around.
What happens if you're performing the duty and then you realize you have some type of desire to control or want the situation to come out a certain way, but you are trying to actually do that without the attachment? How do you handle that?
See how can that particular attachment or the results from that be engaged in Krishna service? So it's a matter of purification. Because, see, in other words, fulfilling someone's desire, that's not the problem. As long as it's Krishna's desire, you know, or the Vaishnava, then it works. But when we try to please our own desire, that's where the problem comes up. So, having desire is not the problem. Having attachment is not the problem. If you're attached to Krishna, that's not the problem. It's when all these qualities aren't connected to Krishna is the problem. So the first thing to do is connect everything to Krishna. Then, by doing that, one will get purified and things will start to work better. Yeah? Even after... The living entity enjoys the material body, which appears and disappears. But the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, remain the same. The example given here is that pots and dolls are produced from earth, and then broken or destroyed, they mingle with their original ingredients. In any case, the source of supply remains the same. Right? The body may think this is nice or not, we're identifying, but in actuality, since it's something separate, we don't have to be involved in that. So the pleasure is the devotional service. Because Krishna's, it's not about the technique of doing something, but the result. Because he is the technique, he is the result. We have to remember, the jnana and kriya shaktis are expanding from him. Balaram and Mahanarayan are expanding from him. Right? So therefore, it's him that is the knowledge in the situation. It's him that's the activity and the result gained. Yes?
Can we say that jnana would be Balaram and kriya would be Sankarsan?
The other way.
So like by the
okay. No, Balaram's kriya, his action, and Vasudev is. Vasudev means this is Mahavasudev. This doesn't mean Vasudeva the Chakravyuha. right?
Yeah.
So if you're looking at it from the Chaturvyuha thing, then it's Sankalpa.
Can we say?
You understand? That's why one has to understand is the particular, like we were saying before, the intent. What is the purpose of the particular point being made? That way, how we'll use the words.
That's what I'm saying. Because in my mind, Balaram is the field.
No, he's the action.
We usually say that he
here, let's try it like this. If that doesn't work there. Because sometimes we get confused in this other one. Because you don't really make so much of a connection. Okay, let's go to Gauralila. Right? There we make more of a connection. Okay? You have Lord Chaitanya, Icha, Lord Nityananda, Kriya, and Advaitacharya, Jnana.
Well, that's clear.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because Advaitacharya is Mahasankarsha.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Mm-hmm. So, the field and all that, that's there. Then Balaram is then the activities that are going on.
I think the confusion was because we usually say that Balaram becomes Krishna's bag, he sues, he's everything. So it means like...
Yes, but then who's expanding as Mahavishnu? Balaram. So in other words, Balaram, of course, it's his expansion makes that, but the point is he's controlling this. You know, so in other words, the situations, the mood, the false ego, all that is required, the attitudes or the appreciation of sweetness majesty, these are all from Advaitacharya. Right? Actual engagement in the Sankirtan movement, that's Nityananda. Right? But why are we doing that? It's to please Lord Chaitanya.
In actuality, this has been taken care of by Sambhita and Sandini?
Yes, you can say that aspect there. It means, depending upon how you're approaching it, then you have different things. One has influence, one has this, that. Then they're all dealing with the same things, the Surup Shakti. But depending upon what's going on, then you use Ichakriya Jnana, you use Hladini, Sambhit, Sandini. Does that make sense? You use internal, external jivas. You understand? Depending upon what aspect you're bringing out. Because there's only Krishna and his Surup Shakti. So basically you say there's only Krishna, because he and his energy are non-different. But when you break there is the difference, when you're discussing the difference, then you can see what's the same in all these energies within the Surup Shakti, but you can also see the difference. So in other words, Haladini is taking care of Krishna's desires. Some of it is the arrangements that are being made, and all that means that the actions that are going on, and then the Sandini is your situations. The situations, the moods that those situations create. Right? Because the point is the activity is not dependent upon the environment. But the activity, then there's a mood that goes with that. Right? So the environment is what generates the mood. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, for ourselves, we're walking down the street in Calcutta, right? And depending upon which road you walk on, there are places where there's a few bricks piled up and a piece of wood and a piece of plastic, and there's a tire on the top of the plastic to keep it from blowing away, right? And it's right there on the sidewalk, right? And on the sidewalk, right there sitting on the pavement, there's this little baby. Right? And next to it's the mother playing with the baby and interacting. And for them, they're having this really nice parental interaction. Right? So for them, that's home. So then it works nicely. But for us, it's not exactly home. Right? You know, if our baby ended up on that sidewalk, we might be going to the hospital or something, or taking him home and completely fumigating them, or dipping them in a bottle of Dettol. Or, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like that. That's so. It wouldn't work for us, the situation, but for them, on the modes and the conditioning, then it's there. So the situation creates the environment, the mood. Then the activity can go on. That's Kriya. Right? And then that pleases Krishna. That's the Gita. Does that make sense? So if you're only mentioning Krishna Balaram, it already includes Vasudeva. Like that. So if you're only talking about two of the things, it already includes the third. If you're talking about all three, then they have those positions. So these flavors, because one always has to remember is each one of them has all the flavors. But the point is, since Krishna is already taking that mood, Balaram doesn't need to. Means if Balaram and Krishna are exactly the same, same mood, same everything, then how are we expanding the flavor? Because Balaram has that different mood for the pastime, even though he's exactly the same. Therefore, then the flavor's there. And so then he has all those qualities in him, but he doesn't manifest. He manifests it as Mahanarayan. And that creates the whole situations for the spiritual world. Now to deal with the material, then he expands again as Mahavishnu. Then you can have the creation, maintenance, and destruction. Does that make sense? But otherwise, those are there in their, you know, in their kind of like potential in the spiritual, but the spiritual doesn't need to use them. Because why would you use something inferior when you have superior?
So if I understood correctly, first starts the mood, then the action, then the situation will be created.
That's how we're doing there, but it actually starts because of Krishna's mood.
So
therefore you therefore then the other two, then an action does that, so therefore there's the mood. So that's how they go down. So in this way, you take it, Advaitacharya of the three is the senior one, right? He's the one, the teacher for the other two. Okay. Then you have Nityananda, who's the elder brother. Then you have, Lord Chaitanya. Because in this, the teacher, the older brother, they're going to take care of the younger, you know, and take care, and so it's all about him. Right? You know, because on this platform, attachment's good. Does that make sense? So you always see him in that senior position. Same way. So that means is then Yogamaya, then who is she taken care of by? That aspect of Yogamaya is taken care of by the Vasudeva aspect. Means it in Mahasankarsha. You understand? The Dham is taken care of by Balaram. But then the Ladini aspect, that's taken care of by Krishna. So Radharani is the Surup Shakti. So is Yogamaya, but different flavors, so different manifestations. Does that make sense? Yeah. Means in other words, these technical points are there for it means one is then we understand the difference between things, but it's not necessary on a basic level, what we're discussing here is. But to appreciate the difference in the rasas and what's going on and how it's arranged. Right, like Purnamasi, what is she always doing? Yeah, she's always doing backup arrangements. So even though she's controlling the whole thing, the whole of Braj, it's not about her. It's about Radha and Krishna. Because she's only doing that for them. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? And then within the pastimes, Vrinda does that. You know, in Radha Krishna's pastime, she's the one who does that there. You know, but then because the pastimes include something bigger than just the kunjas and like this, because you have cowherd boys, you know, and their scene going on, and Jatila and Kautila, you know, moving around doing their scene, and then, you know, so then Purnamasi does the whole bigger thing. You understand? So you always have that aspect, is that. That Radharani is there, then you have Vishakha, then you have Jamuna. Does that make sense? So, in the Jamuna situation, then Krishna with the cowherd girls, they're splashing and playing, so that Radha and Krishna can appreciate them. In a sense, so you always have these three. Whatever the situation is, always there. So what we're trying to do is in that situation please Krishna. Therefore, the knowledge, and how do you please? The results that are gained are to please Krishna. That's done by an activity. So I do a particular activity in a situation. But the situation itself gives rise to particular action, using particular knowledge and particular attitude. Is that what it says? So that's all we're trying to do in the Krishna consciousness. So you can see it's actually something very simple. But the problem is, except for a few moments like these, where we're going, wow, that's really nice, then we're thinking of something else and, you know... Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that this is actually what you're trying to do. Because it's not about these three, it's about the cooperation between them. That's why here we break it down into Samvit, Sandhi, Nihladini, but in the spiritual world they don't do that. It's just different devotees do different activities. That's why the thing of sticking to your duties is so important. Here we take it as a whole restriction in this, and I'm not the body, and this whole revolt. But there's, if Purnimasi decided she's going to come to the Rasa dance and dance also, it's like, you know what I'm saying? Everybody does what they're supposed to do. They don't get involved. Right? Does that make sense? That, so we see that's one of the first things that's straightened out in the Rasa dance, in the Rasa Lila. The first thing that happens, they all come and all this and that, then when they start the dance, then what happens? Krishna leaves. Why? Because they won't accept Radharani's position. They think they're the center of it, when Radharani's the center of it. She's a Vladimir. They're all expansion, so therefore they take part in arrangements and activities. And then the gopis are all taking part there. What are the maidservants doing? They're also out there dancing? No, they're playing all the musical instruments, making the arrangements, sweeping the place, making it nice, and then arranging kunjas, doing all that kind of stuff. In a sense, so that's this whole thing of that everybody does their duty to please Krishna is straightforward Krishna conscious. That's all they do in the spiritual world. But for us, it's an affront to our I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's why we can't digest all these things. And do we need to do that? That's so archaic. It's eternal. It's going on now. Does that make sense? So that's why it said to oppose the Vedic version. That's considered atheistic. Because the Vedic version is what they do in the spiritual world, just they don't have that mundane identity that we may have in following it. But the form is the same. Rasa is one thing. It's just if you're applying it to please Krishna, you're applying it to please your emotions, or you're applying it to please your senses. But the mechanics of Ashray, Vishay, and how that works is the same. It doesn't work any other way. You know what I'm saying? The pot here, you put the sabji in, you cook, put it on the fire, you cook it. In the spiritual world, Mother Yashoda in her kitchen, they have a pot, they put vegetables in it, put it on the fire, and stir it around. Same thing. Not different. Just the results they get might be slightly different. The perfection of the balance and everything else. And yes. The difference between nectar and... how you say, yes, how did you like it? Oh yes, it was very filling. Yes, so the kind of difference between that range. Okay. Good. Yeah. So is that... Yeah. Well, that's the whole idea of why discussing things in the association of devotees, by that association, that mood, then, you know, you get that little, what do you call it? The chair comes up for that moment, you get a little air before Maya puts it back under the water again. That's the whole idea. So you keep doing that, and that ends up as a volume. You understand? This is what it's meant by, oh, these devotees have such great piety. Right? This is the piety that it's talking about. The Krishna conscious piety. That adding up, that then moves faith. Because when it gets enough, you get faith. But how does it move forward? By accumulating more, then it moves it to sadhusanga, it moves it to bhajana kriya, moving like that. So mature faith is prema. So that means faith comes from the proper performance of pious activities or devotional activities. So that being performed, when that volume is great enough, then by Krishna's grace and Bhakti Devi's grace, then you get prema. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the whole idea.
We need more volume.
Yes, we need more volume. So that's the idea of why we try to engage ourselves in a maximum amount of direct activities in the association of devotees, and also then see the indirect connected to Krishna. Because all this helps. The idea is that, how you say, the saying by hook or by crook, you know, some, you know, or beg, borrow, or steal, but somehow or another get prema, right? Like that. Kamsa continued. One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and soul, atma, becomes too attached to the bodily conception of life, concept of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union with and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life. Otherwise, one is liberated. Right? What do you call it? You know, this is the meaning of taking good instruction from, you know, or moral instruction from a sinful person. Because the point is what area means morality is about what? Not performing sin. Right? Why not? Because sin gives such a bad reaction. So, when everything's correct, if the sinful person talks on the basis of morality, their realization is very great because they deal in this field, so they know how great the suffering is. They know how bad it is, but they're attached to it, that's all. But they can tell you how bad it is. So this is then where it comes down, but, you know, where the demons are giving good instruction. Srila Prabhupada comments, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 1.2.6, Savaipum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje ahait tuk yapatihata yayatma supasigati. The word dharma means engagement. One who is engaged in the service of the Lord, yato bhaktir adhoksaje, without impediment and without sensation, is understood to be situated in his original spiritual status. Right? So here, dharma means the engagement, right? Because the nature of something means what you can do with it, what its use is, its purpose. That's how you define the dharma, right? What is it for, right? Like if you have sugar, its nature is it's sweet, but what's its dharma? What's it for? To make things sweet. That's why it's there, right? So one who's engaged, you know, service of the Lord. So the engagement is to please the Lord. So here, Kamsa is giving very good advice, but he's not seeing a connection to the Lord. But Vasudeva Deva are, right? So the same way as we see it in connection with the Lord, then we get that benefit. Yes.
Kamsa is not seeing it in connection with the Lord. He follows kind of karma mimamsa thing.
You would say yes. Karma, because you can see he's not at this point interested in liberation. He's just interested in karma. So the point is by following the Vedic rules, you get the best material results. Now, depending upon how much character you have, then you can see it in that long-term thing and work for longer. Like you say, sometimes you have these really big materialists. They can work on a 20-year business plan. You know, so by the time that they're, you know, after 20 years, they're really well situated. But someone else can't do that. It means if someone talks about a 5-year plan, you're thinking, wow. But the really big success, they work in 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's just more. So we're working on, then the Veda gives you work on lifetimes. You know, like that. We're going to do this for our lifetime, Krishna consciousness, remember Krishna. Right? So it's a much longer term thing. So the bigger the demon, generally the more, in one sense, character that they have, that they can apply it within the materialism and get greater results over a longer period. Right? Hiranyakashipu, it took some time before he had control of the universe. Like that. So, it, you know, whatever it takes to do that. Well, small-time demons, they can't do that. But because they're materialists, at some point, they're going to choose the immediate. As soon as the balance between character and desire runs out, then they're going to do something that's not appropriate or not recommended because of their, so we see Kamsa, then, you know, harassing his sister, killing her children, you know, locking her up in prison because he didn't have the character on that side to take it further. But someone like Bali Maharaj then could take it further. So he could see that these different things, but then he saw the benefit of engaging in the Lord's service. So then he took it to this ultimate, Sabai Pum Sopara Niswarika, Yato Bhaktir the Hoksa Jay. He was able to take it to that platform and he got that benefit. Right? So now in here, without impediment and without cessation means the devotional attitude. It doesn't mean that the activity, the dharma you're performing or the engagement won't have impediments and obstacles. But the devotion in which you're trying to apply it and keep yourself engaged, that doesn't have impediment or cessation. Right? So that's steady devotional service. That's nishtha. That's what we're trying to get to. No? Oh, okay. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. So you don't judge the devotional service on the obstacles. You judge it by the steadiness of the devotional attitude and endeavor, that endeavor. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the engagement is what you're expressing the bhakti through. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. When one is promoted to this status, one is always happy in transcendental bliss. Because it's about Krishna, so you're not affected by the material arrangements. Right? If we're attached to the material arrangements, then we're affected. Things are good, we like it. Things aren't good, we have a problem. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So, therefore, one is always happy in transcendental bliss. Right? Because for on the mundane platform, it's the arrangements we have. The action, the situation I'm in, it's a good situation, I'm happy. The work is going well, I'm happy. I get the result I want, then that's where I officially call myself happy. And then that what you gain there, that becomes your next situation. Mm-hmm. You understand? But it's the situation you wanted. Does that make sense? So I'll call that as without impediments, without cessation, and happiness. But that's temporary because there's always impediments there, there's always cessation, and there's always, most of the time, unhappiness. So that means is we have to catch that devotional service is working above the performance of dharma. That's why it says sarva dharmam parityaja. You have to give up the attachment and focus on consciousness on the dharma and put it on pleasing Krishna. It doesn't mean the dharma is not performed. That's generally what it's thought. Oh, sarva dharma, give up means I don't perform it. No, give up performing the dharma for the benefit that the dharma gives. Simply be engaged in devotional service, which means the dharma is just engaged to please Krishna. So if I'm doing, like Yudhishthira Maharaj is doing the duties of a king simply to please Krishna, that's sarva dharmam parityaja. He's not attached to that. So then when he loses the kingdom, then he lives out in the forest for Krishna. Right? So now they apply, you know, that lifestyle. You understand? When he's in the palace, he applies that and all the dharmas that go with that. When he's out in the forest, he applies those. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So that level, that's the platform of pure devotion. That's what one's trying to do. Mixed devotion means it's that and the dharma. You know, or the adharma, depending upon our particular, you know, how you say, cultural leaning. You understand? So then you could say, sarva dharma. Pretty good job, right? Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense? Following the mood of the point made earlier. Just make the A longer, shorter, and you get another meaning. Right? And the acharyas do that in their commentaries. Because when you have that, when it's a Sunday, if you have two short A's and they go together, it becomes a long A. But if it was one long A, and a short A, it also becomes a long A. Or two long A's, it becomes a long A. So that means you could get all those meanings out of it. So that's how you see the Acharyas. They can get so many meanings out of something because they see what's behind all these. Because in Sanskrit, the words, they actually are dealing with the particular subject matter. They have a connection with the mechanics of it and the nature of it and everything. That's why those words are used. Yes. Yeah, Niyamagraha, Niyamagraha, like that. So it's either one. But when you put it together, it's going to be Niyamagraha. But it's, yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Otherwise, as long as one is in the bodily concept of life, one must suffer material conditions, right? Because you will suffer the impediments and the cessation because you're performing the dharma, the engagement for material desire. But when that's given up, you only do it to please Krishna, right? The yato bhakti and hosu jay. Then you are going to be unaffected. You will be happy and transcendental bliss, even though externally things aren't necessarily going ideally. Because it's not about whether it goes ideally or not. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. It's a matter of if it's continuous connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So just like, let's say, the cowherd, the elder gopis, then what is some of the duties that they're famous for doing? Milking the cows and then cooking, churning the yogurt to make butter, right? So they either make yogurt and then from that they churn it to make butter. So then the yogurt means you have to have it in a pot, right? To become nice yogurt, right? Best yogurt goes in a clay pot, right? Because it's like that. Then, after you make butter, where do you put it? In a pot. And then what do you do with those pots? You hang them up, right? And then what happens? Krishna comes and breaks the pot, steals them, feeds it to the monkeys, feeds it to the cowherd boys, you know, it's a whole riot going on. Now, so is the elder gopis their actual dharma, meaning that their main point that they want to get, the ultimate thing, is having all these perfect pots of, you know, butter and yogurt. And so Krishna coming, breaking the pots is breaking down, you know, is affecting and is creating impediments, you know, in their dharma. Is that their main focus? No. It's about interacting with Krishna. Therefore, they'll come to Mother Yashoda, and what will they do? What will they complain about? The pots, right? But it's not about the pots, because Mother Yashoda says, oh, okay, I'll take them, I'll chastise them, I'll take off all the jewels so he can't see, and this and that. No, 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 don't do that, he looks so beautiful and that, don't be too strong on him, you know, boys will be boy, like this and that. Because the whole point is just about Krishna. It's not about the pots. Pots is their occupational duty. That's their dharma, but their dharma is engaged in Krishna's service. You understand? Just like the cowherd boys, they take the cows out. They're engaging in Krishna's service. That's their dharma. But what's the whole point? To please Krishna. You understand? So all we're being done is asked to do what they do in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? And the residents of Vrindavan, they're not big, big Brahmins. They're not big Kshatriyas. They're Vaishyas and Shudras. You understand? There are some Brahmins there, but they didn't work out so good, so like that. Their wives did a lot better, right? So the thing is it's not about the status. But we see in Navadvip, then there everyone's Brahmins, they do that and they engage that in Krishna's service. In Dwarka, then they're Kshatriyas, they're engaging that in Krishna's service. Then Braj and their Vaishyas are engaging that in Krishna's service. Right? And in all three fields, they all have Shudras, so they're all engaged in those things. You understand? So, on all them, Krishna is tasting devotional service. So it's not that one of them superior to the other. Each one of them has their own flavor. Does that make sense? So, that's what we're being asked to do. Just what is your engagement? Do that for Krishna. Now, if you scientifically know what you should be doing or not, point is whatever you are doing, do that to please Krishna. That's what we're trying to do. And if it can be scientifically arranged, it makes things more smooth. But even if it's not, whatever you're doing, you just engage in Krishna's service. That's the main thing. Because all it is if you're not following the Vedic recommendation, just means there'll be more obstacles and disturbance on that path. You understand? But if you're focused on bhakti, it won't be a disturbance. Right? Does that make sense? So if it's not arranged like that, and it's not your business, you just do what you can. You're involved in Krishna's service. So all the things that are recommended, you follow the Pancharatric lifestyle, you follow the Bhagavat lifestyle, it all includes the Dharma that goes along with that. Does that make sense? On the Brahminical platform. So then, even without understanding too much, you just understand the Pancharatric and Bhagavat process and engage in that, you know, getting up in the morning, do all the things that's recommended in the process of deity worship and then the preaching and all that. You're already engaged in all the essential activities of the Vedic system. You understand? So that's why when we were in the temples, probably didn't talk much about Varnashram. A little bit, but not much, because it wasn't necessary, because they were already following. Right? But as soon as you extend outside the temple into community, then you need to require Varnashram to organize that, because then it's not the direct activities of devotional service. Those are the occupational activities of a Brahmin. Therefore, then it's not going. But then when you bring in those other things, then you actually, it is occupational, that it is about money. And then that can be connected to Krishna. And then you have Brahminical activities to support that. You know what I'm saying? Is that, education, so you know how to do those material skills, and law and medicine, because you don't follow things nicely, you get sick, and you don't behave nicely, so then someone is there to see that it's all worked out. You understand? So then it does have that. But the point is that you're just engaged full time in the service, then it doesn't matter about the whole technical things of the Varnashram. You just should not be going against the principles. That's what it said. Don't be going against what's not recommended. You know, don't be doing anything that's against it. Right? So this thing, oh, we don't need Varnashram, that's against it. We may only, an individual may not need very much of it, because it's just part of devotional service, so it's not separately identified as Varnashram. Right? Does that make sense? But the Vedic system is also Varnashram. It's just taken what's directly connected with the deity. So then it's a transcendental position, so it's Brahminical. That's why we say the ashram is Brahminical. Right? So if you're just functioning on the ashram platform, then you could say in that case you're performing devotional service, but you're not necessarily so worried about Varnashram. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Or if you can apply it, then you do, then things will go in a more smooth fashion. Because the modes of nature are do what they do in connection with the laws of nature, which is Krishna's laws, which is how the whole system works. You understand? So if you're not attached, and therefore you don't worry about so much of the broad range of Varnashram rules, then one, you're working in very minimal interaction with the material world, so therefore you have minimal disturbance, so, and that's not going to bother you. Does that make sense? And even if you happen to be dealing with more, it's not going to bother you. So whether you introduce or not, then it's not a problem. But if it's there and Prabhupada mentions it, you would try to do whatever is given here in the purports. Right? Now, if you're attached and have that material, that mixed devotional service, then it does bother you. So then you need to follow it to reduce that. But the problem is that in reducing it, and if you think now everything's wonderful, then the problem is you'll be distracted from devotional service there. So if things are miserable, that keeps you remembering about Krishna. You know, the only difficulty is that because if the material attachment is too strong, then one may give up devotional service, because you'll think other paths will give more material benefit. That's the problem. Right? That's why it's not recommended. But at the same time, following it, one may get conditioned by the mode of goodness and think everything's fabulous and don't see the need for pure devotional service. Right? Because you think what you're doing is good enough. So that's why you see it's confusing in the purports. Sometimes it'll be talking about the Vedic system, but it'll be talking about both in favorable and unfavorable. Because it depends. If it's for Krishna, it's favorable. If it's not for Krishna, it's unfavorable. The same way, the performance of devotional service is there, but just that you're connected to Krishna, that will be the basic principle. But as it goes deeper and deeper, then it starts to show what's pure devotion, what's mixed, what's karma and jnana, and how to drop those. Right? Does that make sense? And then now we even see is that we've started here in 10th canto, then what's the difference between in pure devotion than in sweetness and in majesty? Like that, those in Shanta, those in dynamic rasa. So we're starting to see what's the difference within pure devotional service. Right? Is that what it says?
Mm-hmm. In connection to sometimes it's hard to apply the principle of motivated and unbroken exactly because of what you described, that there are a lot of compounded jnana. And then you have this other place, you know your position, you know, being attacked, and then, for example, you know that many times you have the experience that the result that you aim for, Krishna has a different picture for the result. And that's why sometimes it's like you're very motivated, not unmotivated. At the same time, you do something changes in the external environment, in the situation, something comes up, and you're supposed to apply different set of rules, not what you actually have to do. And then it becomes like,
No, but that's why if you focus on the bhakti, bhakti is the stable thing. That can happen no matter what. You know, no matter what the impediment, you can perform bhakti. That's the thing. While the material, it is dependent upon the material environment, which is dependent upon Krishna. So ultimately, we're dependent upon Krishna for the environment and the results gained from that, the ability, the knowledge, and what we gain from the environment. So that's why we just depend upon Krishna and do things for Krishna. So then, if we do things for Krishna, that's steady, and we depend upon Krishna, then, you know, whatever is there, it will be, you know, the best it can be, and we work with that. So you always have to cut beyond. Because if you try to make things perfect on the material platform, it won't happen. It can't happen. Because the material world is designed to give you trouble. That's what it's for. You know what I'm saying? This idea, I will make a perfect world, but the perfect world is it's all about Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So Ram Rajya, that's perfect, but it's all about Krishna. You know what I'm saying? This idea is no, mechanically we can just make a perfection of the material world, but it's never going to be perfect. It's just how it's designed. It's designed that the living entity won't be comfortable. You know what I'm saying? And if one complains about why did God do it like that, it's because the soul can only be complete if they're absorbed in the internal potency. And since they don't want to do that, then you have to make something that's not complete. Does that make sense? Because that's the point, is that we don't want what's complete. Because complete means connected with Krishna. That's complete. The jiva, his energy, and Krishna, that's complete. Right? That's A-U-M, right? So then that becomes complete. So that is the Mahavakya of the Vedas. Because that shows the Lord, his energies, and the jiva, you know, engaged in pastimes in his transcendental realm. That's what Om is. Right? Those five aspects, right? So that's then what you're trying to deal with. But what we're trying to say is that, oh no, the imperfect can be made perfect. It can't. It's designed imperfect. It's like planned obsolescence. It will break. Planned obsolescence. Something becomes obsolete. It's planned. Okay, we make this car that for 2 years it'll run perfectly because there's a warranty for 2 years. But after 2 years it'll start to fall apart. You understand? So, if anything goes wrong before that, it was a manufacturing defect, because it was supposed to last 2 years. So if it only lasted 1 year, yes, it is their mistake, and they're willing to take that. But as soon as 2 years is up, then, you know, they wash their hands, and now it's all, you know, it's all yours. And then all the things start to fall apart. And what can they do? It's, you know, making only a few parts is very expensive, and so then you need the parts, so they transfer that cost onto you. Yeah, because like you see before, there's probably still 57 Chevys driving around perfectly good. In fact, in Finland, every year they have a V8 conference where everybody that has American V8 cars, they all drive to some place and all, you know, walk around and, you know, ogle at each other's cars. So these are all from the 50s and 60s, maybe even up into the 70s. Right? But you don't see anything after that. That's all fell apart after the 2 years. Right? But those things, they were made to last. So that means they can make it to last. But they don't. So that's planned obsolescence. Does that make sense? So the material world is planned obsolescence. You have a body, it'll last for this much of time, and then it will fall apart. You know what I'm saying? So that's how it works. Unfortunately, there's no warranty. Yeah.
That's take a new one.
Yeah, you just get a new one. Yeah. Yeah, so... You understand? So the material world's made that way, so you can't make it nice. That's why the focusing on the knowledge and skills and thinking that that's what's going to make everything work perfectly is not a very well thought out method. Because bhakti is the only thing that's consistent and steady and produces happiness. And the material, it can't be steady and it can't produce happiness. There'll be a moment we call it happiness, but we called it happiness, someone else didn't. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, in, let's say, after the war, the Great War, then there was some day, forget what it was, something in 44 and something, and then everybody's, you know, the army's coming through the street, there's ticker tape flying, everyone's singing, dancing, and everything like that. That's that side. How did the other side feel? What were they doing? You understand? So... we call that moment happiness. They call that moment distress. So any moment you take and call happiness, someone else will call that distress. That's the whole point. So it's not that there is actual real happiness. Right? Happiness, real happiness is only... you can compare a standard of happiness only in how close it comes to how the mechanics should be performed to please Krishna. That's the only place you can judge it. Otherwise, whatever you call happiness, someone else will call that not. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is anything you take, somebody will say it's not good. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the that's the whole point. It never...
we don't stop to deny.
I was wondering, why are people coming 5 minutes and 10 minutes before class is ending? I was looking at it, it's coming up to 9. I think we had 2 more minutes and 9 o'clock. Oh, okay, now I get it. I was thinking, is that why are you all coming 2 minutes before the class is ending? She came in 10 minutes before the class is ending.
I'm like, why is that?
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. I guess we should have a break. Well, that is so funny. I guess you have to look at both hands, right? So not just the big hand. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Veta Bhakti ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Pema. That is so funny.